Today on Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute. Now, just a few weeks ago, my family, along with millions of others, probably many of you, celebrated 243 years of American freedom. Many recognized the 4th of July with fireworks and barbecues and parades and spending time with loved ones. Those are meaningful activities, especially when done with family and friends. But beyond that, we also want to remember and acknowledge and celebrate what the Founding Fathers did to celebrate this great nation and the blood that has been spilt to defend it. I love this country. I'm proud of it, and I'm sure you are too. And that's why I feel obligated to do what I can to protect it from threats, both foreign and domestic. This profound responsibility is why I'm gravely concerned about the direction that America is headed. In the last 50 years, the Judeo-Christian system of values on which the nation was built has been heavily ridiculed and undermined. Just watch the news and hear what people are saying about this nation. It's like nothing else that has ever occurred in world history. America is unique and exceptional, and we cannot afford to ignore it or fail to defend it. We must continue to defend the heritage that's been handed down to us by generations past. We must boldly live out our Christian walk. And today we're going to listen to a message from a man who's going to challenge us to do just that. I know you know of him, or at least most of you do. His name is Dr. Jay Sekulow, and I admire this man greatly. He's a respected attorney. He's a New York Times best-selling author and a prolific speaker and broadcaster. He is the chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, one of the country's most prestigious law firms. Dr. Sekulow received his PhD from Regent University and is an honors graduate at Mercer Law School and Mercer University. He is an authority on religious freedoms, which he has passionately defended for over 25 years. Dr. Sekulow has argued in front of the Supreme Court 12 times on matters, on cases dealing with the protection of First Amendment rights. I thank God for the work he's done. He also hosts his own radio and television show, which is distributed to millions of people around the country. Dr. Sekulow previously worked with the IRS and the Justice Department. In the recorded message that you're about to hear, Dr. Sekulow shares the story of his family immigrating to this country and his appreciation for American liberty. He also will review several religious freedom cases that he has been involved in over the years. So let's listen to this presentation delivered at a church in Kansas about 10 years ago. Here now is Dr. Jay Sekulow on this edition of Family Talk.
It's great to be with you. And as I look behind me here and I see our national motto, and I think about the fact that my own family came to the United States not that long ago. I'm only the second generation of my family born in the United States. My grandfather came from Russia, fleeing religious persecution. He came through Ellis Island, which has always had a special place in my heart. Was a fruit peddler in Brooklyn, New York. And his grandson in America gets to argue cases at the Supreme Court of the United States. When you think about the majesty of America and the wonder of America, that's the reason. In God we trust. Not in government, not in programs. Our founders had a very unique understanding that liberty and freedom were not the grace of government, but a gift from the Creator. That's why we are endowed with these inalienable rights. And that's why when you go through the Statue of Liberty, and you see that beacon of freedom, and I think about it, my grandfather, Samuel Sekulow, Shmulek was the name in Hebrew. Sokolov is how it's pronounced in Russian. Came to the United States at 14 for freedom. And here we are today, and we're still fighting for freedom. But it is the men and women that are putting their life on the line in battlefields far away and in forts around the corner that are defending that freedom. And it's an honor to speak to you all tonight as we honor the veterans who are serving our country. And from me, and I know from all of you, to our veterans, thank you for protecting us. And by the way, In God We Trust is in the Capitol Visitor Center now. And it's a big deal, because when they built the new almost $1 billion, because nothing in Washington is inexpensive, Capitol Center, initially when the congressman walked through, In God We Trust was absent. Our national motto emblazoned over the speaker's podium in the Congress was not in the Capitol Visitor Center. So Congressman Forbes and Congressman Franks and a number of others made sure it was there, and sure enough, that's about the length of my Southern, by the way, sure enough. I do say you all from time to time. But ultimately, a lawsuit was filed by the Freedom From Religion Foundation challenging our national motto as establishing a religion. Now, what the national motto reflects is our heritage of our country. We should not be ashamed of it. We should not run away from it. You know, when I argue those cases at the Supreme Court of the United States, they start every session the same way and have since 1789. God save the United States and this honorable court. And I will never forget the meaning of that more than after 9/11. Because we could not have the Supreme Court operate in its own building because of the anthrax. That week, I was in the Department of Justice with John Ashcroft as the attack, just a day or two after the attack took place. I was at the Supreme Court. I was at the Senate office building, all of which had anthrax. Logan's brother, Jordan, same thing. We were taking the Cipro. You remember those days. But I will never forget the Supreme Court of the United States meeting in the U.S. District Court courtroom. And when they said, the crier said, which they've been saying since 1789, God save the United States and this honorable court. God save the United States. As the Pentagon still smoldering a mile and a half away. It is a prayer and invocation for protection. I thought about that this week with what the media called the criminal act of violence at Fort Hood, which those of you that listen to my radio broadcast know I called it exactly what it is, an act of Islamic terrorism. It's not politically correct to say it. It's not politically correct to say it, but it's reality. Now, I'm telling you this as somebody that I represent Palestinian Christians. It was not an anti-Arab issue for me. And I'm going to tell you about that case representing those Palestinian Christians. But this is an attack on our sovereignty, on our freedom, and 13 men and women, 14, if you consider the fact that one of the young soldiers that was killed was pregnant, were killed because of this act of terror. Despite this, we live in the greatest country in the world. I litigate all over the United States. I litigate all around the world. What a lot of you probably don't know is that while we have offices in Washington, D.C., and we are literally the neighbors of the Supreme Court of the United States, what you probably don't know is I closed on that building about 4 days after 9/11. When I couldn't get insurance, nobody would insure in a building next to the Supreme Court, a block away from the United States Capitol. It wasn't going to happen. I had a staff that was scared to be in downtown Washington, D.C., because we didn't know if there was going to be another attack. We assumed there was. I was sitting in our apartment in Washington at the time, and I received a phone call from Bill Bright. Dr. Bright, of course, headed up Campus Crusade for Christ. He goes, Jay, I don't know why I'm calling you, except the Lord told me to call you and pray for you because you've got to make a big decision. I don't know what that decision is, but what the Lord's telling me is just move forward. Don't look back. Move forward. I told him what the decision was. Was I going to close on this large building in Washington, D.C., on the corner of Constitution and 2nd Avenue? He gave me assurance that he felt that he was supposed to call for that reason. I got a call an hour and a half later from another ministry leader, completely on a different kind of ministry. Ken Copeland called me up. Ken Copeland calls me up. So I have the Campus Crusade for Christ president calling me up and Ken Copeland. Ken calls me and said, Gloria and I were praying this morning and God told us to call you and say, just go forward with whatever you're supposed to do. And he goes, I don't even know what that is. And we did it. And we acquired that building. That building that I looked at 20 years before, 25 years before, when I argued my very first case at the Supreme Court of the United States, representing Jews for Jesus. And you might be asking yourself, what was a kid born in Brooklyn, New York, doing representing Jews for Jesus? I will give you the quick version of that. Like a lot of Jewish young people that are now running a lot of ministries, I came to faith in the 1970s on college campuses. It was during the Jesus movement. And my Baptist college that I went to, and ask me how I got to a Baptist college, the kid from Brooklyn, is a long story. I don't have time to give it to you. But I will tell you what, on that Baptist college, there was a strong witness for the Lord. And I had to take a course in either Old Testament or New Testament. Since I thought I was an Old Testament scholar because I was bar mitzvahed, I thought I knew everything about the Old Testament, which in reality I did not. I took the course in New Testament. And you know when they say that the Bible says that the word does not return void? I am living proof of that. And it was the reading of the scriptures and the witness of my friend Pam, now my wife, Logan's mother, Jordan's mother, our two pets' mother, because when the kids go, you get the pets. The fact is, and the witness of a very good friend of mine on that campus, who used to wear this giant wooden cross. I mean, I imagine this cross was 6 feet tall. I mean, it was this giant cross. This was the 1970s, long hair and a big cross. He never shoved that cross down my throat, though. But he was a constant witness, and we talked. And ultimately, I came to faith. I worked for, right out of law school, went to work for your favorite department of the United States government, the Internal Revenue Service. Office of Chief Counsel, Department of the Treasury, the IRS was the client. I was a tax litigator. And Jews for Jesus, who I'd supported from time to time, was trying to buy a building in New York, and I'd left the IRS and was in private practice and affiliated with a firm in Manhattan, and they were trying to buy a building, but they didn't want to do it the old-fashioned way in New York, which was not the way you would want to do it if you were a Christian ministry. They wanted to do it straight up. So it took about a year. We negotiated a straight-up deal, which was not easy to get. It took me about 5 years to get the certificate of occupancy. It's New York. It's the way it is. But they asked me, the executive director of the ministry called me one day and said, come to San Francisco next time you're out, I need to talk to you. I was going to be there in 2 weeks on a tax conference. I went to see him. He said, I need you to argue a case at the Supreme Court in the United States. I said, no. You do not want me arguing your Supreme Court. I did very well in constitutional law. I have never argued a constitutional law case in my life. In fact, had never argued an appeal in my life. I was a trial lawyer defending criminal tax cases. He insisted, he said it'll be a life changer, and boy, was he right. And I argued that case. One of the big legal periodicals that drives me with stories even to this day, I will just say it that way, said I was rude, aggressive, and obnoxious. And they were absolutely correct. Not the obnoxious part. I was pretty aggressive, and I did cut the Chief Justice off mid-sentence, which I learned not to do that. The decision came out 5 months later. It was 9-0 in a religion case in our favor. That same periodical said, I remained undeterred during intense questioning. That's Washington. But it was unanimous. And Christian lawyers, there was this view out there that Christian lawyers were kind of meek and mild and manageable and nice and reconciliation. And I wasn't opposed to reconciliation, but I was a litigator from Brooklyn. And, you know, I didn't look like the Christian lawyer guy. I looked like the Brooklyn guy. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story. We had a big Operation Rescue. Remember that? Right here in Kansas. In the late 80s and early 90s, and it was, 20,000 protesters. We were in New York trying this case. I sit down at the table. I'll never forget this. One of the staff members from Planned Parenthood looks at me, comes to my table, and starts talking to me as if I'm their lawyer. I look like their guy. I said, wrong table. Move over. By the way, there's an interesting story about that Planned Parenthood case. The Planned Parenthood was involved in a lot of these cases, and you know, we had that partial birth abortion case at the Supreme Court of the United States, but I was involved in the trial of that case. Of course, at the Supreme Court as well, but at the trial of that case. And I was in New York for about 4 months. John Ashcroft was the Attorney General of the United States. I will never forget the testimony in that trial, because for the first time in 20 years, we had a judge that was pro-life. And I will never, we'd make these objections. He was sustaining all of them. And I said, he better overrule us on something. And he did, ultimately, on some things. But the end result was we won that case at the Supreme Court of the United States. And outlawed, of course, we were the only country in the world that allowed that. In the world. Nobody allowed that. To terminate the life of an unborn child during delivery? But as we litigated that case with the low-key style that you're now used to seeing me do, not so low-key, I realized that when you come to Christ, your worldview changes, but your DNA does not. God knew in his sovereignty. I had one of the articles that did its profile on me a number of years back. You know, Jews in the Christian right. Why are all these Jewish guys that are Jewish Christians, Messianic Jews, however you want to define it, leading all these Christian organizations? And it's not true with every organization. It's not true with most organizations. But a lot of the advocacy kind of groups have a lot of Jewish influence. And I think there is a special burden that we carry as Jews and as Jewish Christians. Because my family was wiped out in the Holocaust. There are not many seculos. I know what tyranny is. I see it when I go to my family cemetery and there's a list of 244 names of seculos that died in that Holocaust. Or my mother's side of the family where there's no one left. I know the reality of brutality and suppression. So we litigate these cases with vigor. Whether it's Jews for Jesus handing out a gospel tract at an airport, whether it's pro-lifers in front of an abortion clinic, whether it's the posting of "In God We Trust" in the Capitol Visitor Center, whether it's the case of a young Muslim who comes to Christ and is going to be deported from the United Kingdom to Syria, where he faces a certain death sentence. A man is studying, 26 years old, studying to be a radical Islamic cleric in Syria. He is sent to the United Arab Emirates to train to be a cleric for the jihadists. He is given a gospel tract by a pastor on a street corner, and he has a Damascus Road type of experience. His Palestinian wife had already come to Christ, which he didn't even know. Because if she would have told him, under Sharia law, it's a death sentence. They left the UAE and went to the United Kingdom where they sought asylum. And they were denied. They were going to be sent back to their safe country, Syria. That's the safe country. I said, well, how do we handle this case when it comes in? And our young lawyer said, well, you know, this is an immigration case. We handle this, we go through the immigration authorities, I said, wrong answer. This is a death penalty case. Because this husband and wife, shipped back to Syria, are not going to be sent to the principal's office because they had a Bible study that they weren't supposed to have according to the principal. They're going to be executed. And executed with governmental protection. Unacceptable. Handle this like a death penalty case. Bring in the expert witnesses. Bring in the television cameras. Make this an event. We did. It was the first case like this that any side won. We won it at the trial court. We won it at the Court of Appeals. We won it at the highest level of their review system and set a national precedent. All of Europe was impacted. This case is being discussed all over Europe. And we've had many, many wins since. We're in court Monday. A young woman married, 23 years old now, came from a Muslim background from Pakistan. When she was 16 years old, her family sent her to Pakistan because they were worried that she was starting to talk to a pastor and starting to hang around with Christians at school. They shipped her back to Pakistan for a vacation. She went through a betrothal ceremony. You know what that is? At 16 years old, she was, quote, married to someone she had never met and had never seen since. The reason is the family does that to avoid shame, and now under Sharia law, you can imagine. She didn't even know what she participated in. She's a 15, 16-year-old kid. She then gets married. She came to Christ, marries a pastor. Her parents file criminal charges against her for bigamy, being multiply married. And a local district attorney is prosecuting her. Now, I'm hopeful on Monday that prosecution's over with, because we've dispatched a team, because we have a lawyer on our staff that is from Pakistan. We have an office in Pakistan. We've got the expert witnesses coming in to testify. This is the struggle. It is a struggle for the very heart and soul of our country. In the 1990s, we were worried about whether a Christian church could utilize a school facility for their worship service, or whether students could have a Bible study in their public school, or whether the teacher could participate in some kind of Christian activity outside of the school. We won those cases. We continue to win those cases. That's not the threat to America. The threat to America, and I say this with the tragedy that we've suffered as a nation at Fort Hood, the threat to America today comes from an enemy that wants to destroy the very freedoms and liberties that God has given us. And we are naive to think for a moment. We're naive to think for a moment that they will not seek, devour, and destroy if enabled. And what is the institution that stands against this? Is it a group of lawyers? Is it a group of politicians in Washington, D.C.? Is it with Supreme Court justices? The answer really is no. All of it, which, by the way, have a very important role to play in this. The lawyers, the judges, the politicians. But it's the church. That is the institution that has to be held up. I always tell people, you know, people say, we're praying for you, which, believe me, I appreciate, and I encourage you to continue to do that. And I appreciate it. So many of you came up to me tonight and said, you're praying for me and my family, and I really appreciate it. We've got the easier job in that sense. We're the lawyers. They're the client. It's much harder to be the client than it is to be the lawyer.
You have been listening to a very patriotic and inspiring edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and our guest today was respected lawyer and author Jay Sekulow. Visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org for more information about Dr. Sekulow or the American Center for Law and Justice. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org, and then tap onto the broadcast button at the top of the page. Now, while you're on our site, be sure you check out the Dobson Digital Library as well at dobsonlibrary.com. This is our online inventory of all of Dr. Dobson's work, and that's a body of work that spans more than 40 years. We have cataloged all of his articles, blogs, newsletters, and past radio programs as resources just for you. You can also search under the headings of marriage, faith, parenting, and culture. There are tabs for each of those to help you find what you need. Stop looking elsewhere for practical tools and insights to help your family. You'll find it all when you take advantage of Dr. Dobson's more than 40 years of knowledge at dobsonlibrary.com. That's dobsonlibrary.com. Are you tired of being bogged down by the destructive and obscene material that you often find online? Well, if that's the case, then be sure to follow Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Our profiles focus on uplifting content that will bless you and your family. You can catch up on past broadcasts, read engaging articles, or just enjoy the great scriptures that we post. Fill your day with God-honoring material when you go online and follow Family Talk on social media. That's at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow for the conclusion of Dr. Jay Sekulow's presentation on preserving American freedoms. That's all coming your way tomorrow right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton, Executive Director of the James Dobson Family Institute. Our ministry here exists to honor the Lord through ministering to today's families and marriages all over the world. We couldn't accomplish that, however, without your support. And as the JDFI, the James Dobson Family Institute, continues to grow, we need your help. Visit us, will you do that, at drjamesdobson.org or call us toll-free at 877-732-6825. Stand with us and fight for righteousness and culture.